Okay, let's get started. I have determined that a quorum is present, and I hereby call the meeting to order. We begin our work this evening with heavy hearts. We learn today of the recent passing of longtime resident Peg Whittemore. Peg moved to Sudbury in 1960, and in 1966 she was one of 16 women nationally to win a full scholarship from the National Science Foundation to Wellesley College, where she earned a Master's of Science in Chemistry. She served on numerous boards and committees over her many years, including the Council on Aging, but she will probably be best remembered for her love of the outdoors, her commitment to sustainability and the environment, her dedication to enjoying and preserving the Wayside Inn, and of course her very wry sense of humor. Our hearts go out to Tim and her family. We should also take a moment to remember and honor all the victims of senseless violence in our society, especially the 102 innocent people who were murdered and wounded or wounded by a deranged gunman in Orlando on Saturday night. Please join me by honoring Peg and those victims by observing a moment of silence. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, please allow me to introduce you to Summer Stewart, Madeline Paquette, Olivia Bodley, Jack Troiano, Charlotte Deason, Andrew LaScaglia, Caleb Martin Rosenthal, Antoine Bays, Anna Shaughnessy, Patrick McGrath, and Sarah Kimball. They are LS students and members of the singing group Accent a Cappella. If you are able, please rise for the singing of our national anthem. Thank you, Accent a Cappella. So, good evening. My name is Michael Fee. It is my honor to serve you as moderator for this special town meeting. In the event I am unable to preside over an article due to illness or conflict, it's necessary that we appoint an assistant moderator. I've asked Myron Fox to serve in that role. May I have a motion approving the appointment of Mr. Fox as assistant town moderator for this special town meeting? Does it have a second? All those in favor, majority. All those opposed? Passes nearly unanimously. I'll get to you in a minute. For the record, I've examined and found in order the call of the meeting, the officer's return of service, and confirmation of timely mailing of the warrant to residents. I also can report to the hall that the town's certified free cash as of today remains, as it did at our annual town meeting in May, steady at the sum of $1,190,989. Allow me to introduce our town officials. Please raise your hand when I call your name. To my right is Town Clerk Rosemary Harvell and Lauren Goddard, Census Administrator. Sorry, Goddard. To my immediate left sits Town Council Barbara St. Andre. To her left are the Board of Selectmen, Susan Giuliano, Chair, Chuck Woodard, Vice Chair, Pat Brown, Bob Hardy, Len Simon, Town Manager Melissa Murphy-Rodriguez, FinCom, Finance Committee, Susan Berry, Chairperson, Joan Carlton, Vice Chair, Jeffrey Atwater, Jeff Barker, Adrian Davies, Tammy DeFault, Jose Garcia Metin, Fred Fleurieu, Brian Semple. Town staff, in the front row, Mark Thompson, Technology Administrator, Patty Golden, Senior Administrative Assistant to the Town Manager, Layla Frank, Board of Selectmen's Office Supervisor, Cynthia Gary, Director of Assessing, Jody Kablack, Director of Planning and Community Development, Marianne Bilodeau, Director of HR and Assistant Town Manager, Kayla McNamara, Parks, Recreation, and Aquatic Director, Bill Miles, Fire Chief, Scott Nix, Chief of Police, Jim Kelly, Combined Facilities Director, Mark Herwick, Inspector of the Buildings, Bill Murphy, Health Director, Esme Green, Goodnow Library Director, Debbie Deneen, Conservation Coordinator, Deb Galloway, Council on Aging Director, Lillian Virk, Planning and Zoning Coordinator, Kirsten Rupenian, Conservation Coordinator. There are fire exits at the rear of the auditorium where you entered, as well as in the front through the stage. The bathrooms are located immediately across the hall from the rear exit, as well as outside the cafeteria. There are no refreshments tonight, but there are materials on the tables where you entered dealing with the various warrant articles, as well as an important item that I'm going to tell you about right now. You may have seen on your way in surveys from the Sudbury Cultural Council. They are a division of the Mass Cultural Council, and their mission is to support and promote community-originated projects and activities in the arts, humanities, and interpretive sciences to benefit the residents of Sudbury. Every 3 years, they are required to solicit input from the community on their activities. It would be a great help to them if you would stop by at some point this evening and fill out their survey to give them the input that they are required to get. There are extra warrants here on the podium somewhere. If you need a warrant, you don't have one, please come down and get it, or ask a Boy Scout, he'll bring one to you. I'd like to thank Scoutmaster Peter Fishman, members of Sudbury Boy Scouts Troop 63, for their assistance with microphones during tonight's meeting. Tonight we have Ryan Grummer, Tommy Nealand, Bailey Prince, Teddy Liza, Ben Liza, and David Marchand. Thank you, gentlemen. Finally, I'd like to thank the staff and crew of Sudbury TV who do such a great job in bringing this and a wide variety of other town meetings and events to the web at sudburytv.org. Thanks to Lynn Poro, Cliff McGann, Terry Lockhart, and tonight's volunteer crew members Carl Butner, Peter Ciccarello, and Howard Quinn. Okay, some brief procedural matters. I hope you have had an opportunity to review your warrant prior to coming tonight. Unlike some of the more beefy warrants that you get at annual town meeting time, this special town meeting warrant omits the moderator's primer on procedure. So let me ask, how many of you are attending town meeting for the first time? Okay, so it looks like we have a great number of veteran attendees and a few newcomers. So I'll do the short version introduction on procedure, but please, if anyone at any time is confused about what we're doing or why we're doing it, just stand up, let me know, and I'll try to answer any questions that you have regarding the procedural aspects of tonight's town meeting. You know, the basics are as follows. I mean, there's two rules. Don't talk unless I call on you, and be nice. So putting a little more gloss on that, every time you address the hall, please begin by giving your name and address, clearly in order to assure that there is an accurate record. The town clerk is taking down everyone's name and address so that we have a record of these proceedings. And if you desire to be recognized, raise your card. Sometimes it's difficult for me to see people who raise their hands. If you raise your card and still think I don't see you, stand up and raise your card. And I'll try to get to everybody that I see. There are microphones down in the front. You don't need to come down and stand at them unless for some reason we have a lot of people that want to speak on an issue. I might have people line up. But let's just try and go with the Boy Scouts running microphones to the various speakers as we get there. When you get a microphone, hold it to your chin. Hold it straight at your chin and just start talking. And sometimes there will be a little delay while the technician picks up the sound of your voice, and it just will take a second or two. You don't need to tap it or do anything other than talk right into the mic and let the technical folks do their magic. Couple other rules. Only registered voters of the town and non-resident town employees and regional school employees and our elected state officials may speak without leave of the hall. I know that there are some non-residents in the hall tonight. If it becomes necessary for them to give input, I'll definitely ask your permission first. And finally, we should all be mindful of our obligation to treat each other with courtesy and respect. The last several town meetings that I've presided over, I think, have been extraordinary in the way that people have conducted themselves. And it's a testament to the Listening Project and the way that the town has evolved in the last several years in terms of its ability to address each other civilly, no matter how much we might disagree with someone else's point of view. As always, clapping, hissing, booing, or other audible noise for or against any speakers, either before, during, or after presentations, will not be tolerated. Speakers may not make disrespectful comments, whether directed at a voter, speaker, or town official. If you do, your right to speak may be terminated. I almost forgot. Officer Timothy De Silva and Special Officer Ronald Conrado are here from the Sudbury Police Department to ensure good order tonight. Thank you, gentlemen. Okay, on to the special town meeting. I will ask for a motion to dispense with the reading of the call of the annual town meeting, the officer's return of service notice, and the individual articles of the warrant. I have that motion. Is there a second? There is. This requires a majority vote. All in favor, please signify by raising your cards. All opposed? Motion passes unanimously. Article 1. Before we get to Article 1, as you know, according to our bylaws, presenters of articles may speak for a maximum of 10 minutes and all other speakers for a maximum of 5 minutes unless additional time is granted by the hall. Tonight, as you know, Articles 1, 2, and 3 are inherently linked substantively, and they are interdependent. And so it makes sense to address them, at least for presentation purposes, as a whole. To that end, I have asked the Planning Board, who are the article's principal proponent, and the Board of Selectmen, who also wish to present, to consolidate the initial presentations for each of the first three articles and address them in one big presentation. My plan is to have the proponents give an initial presentation of no more than 30 minutes, followed by discussion and vote on Article 1. There will be no additional presentation time allowed after the introduction of Articles 2 and 3, but of course we'll have time to debate and ask questions if it's the will of the hall. Is there any objection from anyone as to proceeding in this fashion? I see no one. Okay, great. Thank you. Article 1, Ms. Giuliano for the motion.
Move to amend Article 9, Zoning Bylaw, to add a new Section 4700, Mixed-Use Overlay District, and to amend the zoning map of the town of Sudbury as stated in the article.
Does that receive a second? It does. Ms. Giuliano, I'm going to start the 30-minute clock right now, and I assume that you and your other presenters can manage your time accordingly.
Correct.
Thank you.
Thank you. Tonight, we have the opportunity to adopt a plan and a project that will be good for Sudbury, for all of Sudbury. This is a plan that has long been in development. It's the culmination of work by the Selectmen and the Planning Board over the last 22 months, but rooted in long-term planning efforts. In fact, the Planning Board has been working on some aspects of this plan, even going back to the 1990s. To varying degrees, your entire town government is working on what is before you tonight as Articles 1, 2, and 3. So we thought it appropriate to offer this joint presentation. We're here tonight because the Raytheon Company is leaving Sudbury. Raytheon came to Sudbury as a result of a town-driven process similar to that which we've engaged to replace them. Special business zoning was created, the private sector was lured to Sudbury, and the results were as expected. Since October of 1958, Raytheon has been our largest taxpayer. Importantly, today, we fully anticipate repeating that part of the equation, the tax revenue part. What will not be repeated due to changing times and other factors is this. Do I have the clicker? The picture of the current, the current facility of Raytheon. The amazing scope of Raytheon's high security facility was a complete mystery to Sudbury residents, except, of course, for those who worked there. The appealing low brick building with the big lawn in front that we all see was just the leading edge of almost 600,000 square feet of office and lab space, almost 2,000 employees, parking for over 2,200 cars, actually, as well as stormwater and wastewater treatment facilities on the site. The aging property was made available as is, but there were no takers. Raytheon, a very good corporate citizen, asked the town what its preferences were under the circumstances. The developer's plan before you tonight is a careful and purposeful response, both to our prior town planning studies and to the answer that was given jointly to Raytheon, jointly and unanimously by the Board of Selectmen and the Planning Board in February of 2015. Since then, the plan has been vetted to an unprecedented degree, which makes sense because this project is unprecedented for Sudbury. This project advances several long-term goals for our town. First, we have long sought the development of affordable housing in a suitable location to allow us to meet our 40B housing goals and to add to our local needs for housing options. The Avalon Bay portion of this project, 250 rental units, would allow us to meet the 10% state-mandated target. But as a 40B project, which is before the Zoning Board of Appeals, the Avalon Bay housing is not part of our zoning votes here tonight. Yet with our votes here tonight, we do have the rare opportunity to offset municipal costs that come with 40B housing. We can do that by approving adjacent, high-tax but low-cost uses that were purposely made part of this mixed-use development. To accomplish this, Article 1 proposes a zoning overlay district for existing, already developed, business-zoned properties. The word overlay means exactly that. Property owners can use the current business zoning rules, or they can apply instead under Article 1 for a plan that lays over the current zoning, one or the other. The rigorous process involved in this new overlay will be explained later, but importantly, it always ends with you here at town meeting making the final decision. The project also meets another key goal, replacing the lost tax revenue from Raytheon. We conservatively expect under $1.7 million in total tax revenues from the project. The experts who are hired by the developers and those who are also hired by the town have looked carefully at the potential school and municipal costs, and given the range of costs that they've projected, we expect that the net tax revenue, that is the revenue we'll receive after expenses, should at the very least replace the tax revenue that we have received from Raytheon over the years, which that net revenue has been about $564,000 per year. A third goal was to negotiate with the developers to obtain some mitigation for the impacts of the project. Of course, there are many, many positive impacts from this project, or we wouldn't be here tonight. But, of course, there are costs, and our aim was to defray some of them. Several mitigating items that we'll discuss later cost millions of dollars and have become part of the project plan itself. One example is that the developers will provide a new traffic light that will coordinate with other Route 20 traffic lights and will improve the Shaw's Plaza. But over and above these added annual taxes, a team of town officials negotiated with the developers for several months, and the legal contract, which resulted, the development agreement, is part of Article 2 tonight. This agreement provides for almost $2.5 million in one-time mitigation payments. It also grants the town additional land around our South Fire Station for future expansion, and that grant is the subject of Article 3. The final goal I will briefly address is an important one, one that's often overlooked. It speaks to how we as a community will benefit beyond the state mandates and the dollars and the cents. The developers of this project are highly experienced and produce high-quality, successful projects. They've been extremely responsive to town input that's been collected from many townspeople over several years. We anticipate that Sudbury residents and their family members will take advantage of the senior living residences and the memory care facility. Further, there are particular attributes of this site that will allow the hosting of possibly multiple restaurants and certain retail that we now drive elsewhere to visit, along with appealing community spaces. All of this and more on 50 acres that the public never saw, but may finally fully engage with for living, shopping, entertainment, and passive recreation. I now will turn it over to the Planning Board to address the particulars. The Planning Board and our Planning and Community Development Director, Jody Kablack, have done the vast majority of the work to bring forth this desirable proposal tonight. They've worked for years and have been meeting weekly for the last several months for just this eventuality. The Planning Board has very carefully and artfully crafted the zoning tool offered in Article 1 to facilitate a desirable redevelopment on Route 20 in a way that retains strict control for the town. Further, they, together with numerous consultants, have painstakingly vetted this particular project. The Board of Selectmen unanimously supports all three articles and strongly urges your support.
Thanks, Susan. Peter Hebert, Chairman of the Planning Board.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. First, let me report that in a unanimous vote, the Planning Board voted prior to this town meeting at about 7:15, its determination that this redevelopment's master development plan conformed to the requirements as set out in the proposed mixed-use overlay district bylaw. And formally issues our conformance recommendations with 55 conditions on this development. So first, let me talk about the site itself, 50 acres. How big is 50 acres? And I think I need a, there we go. Well, it happens miraculously before our eyes. How about three Gillette Stadiums? Not one, not two, but three Gillette Stadiums could fit on this 50 acres. So, being such a significant site, it deserves special attention. And we are hopeful that the planning that went into this redevelopment plan reflects its special characteristics. Moving on. Susan talked about this, and I will mention it briefly. July 2014, Raytheon announces an impending closure of the facility and asks the town what kind of redevelopment it would like to take place. February 2015, the Board of Selectmen and the Planning Board provide a joint letter in response and outline the concept of a mixed-use redevelopment. And this is very much in line with past visioning efforts around Route 20, going back in time to the Sustainable Development Master Plan of 2001 and more recently the Route 20 Corridor Study in 2015. How do I advance that? There we go. Of course, as Susan stated, the Raytheon site was sold. The property was sold to the development team of National Development in Avalon Bay in December 2015. This development team has presented Sudbury with a project that meets the objectives of the Joint Board of Selectmen and Planning Board letter. Let's take a closer look at the proposed redevelopment. The proposed redevelopment doesn't bring us three Gillette Stadiums, nor does it leave behind 20 acres of impervious surface and asphalt parking spaces. It does include retail, a residential memory care facility, and senior age-restricted housing, and a well-planned master development. However, going on to the next slide, it's important to note that the Avalon Bay rental housing development is not affected by tonight's vote, as Susan suggested. It will proceed or not on its own, and that site is located in the upper right-hand part of the parcel, as you see on the screen. The proposed mixed-use overlay district bylaw requires a master development plan to ensure that, in fact, what you see is what you get. This is important to note. These plans have all been well reviewed, and the process that we are voting on tonight, the plan includes 55 conditions that ensure that the pictures we're about to show to you, in fact, will substantially happen with the development. Any modifications will have to be approved either by the planning board or possibly town meeting if the changes are substantial enough. So on to the site. This is the view of the main driveway. This entry to the site includes outdoor seating, wide pedestrian sidewalks, and an inviting village downtown feel. This entry also provides an improved intersection, as noted, located across from the western driveway of Shaw's Plaza. And as you know, that left turn from Shaw's Plaza is particularly dangerous and results in a number of accidents annually. The developer will also pay for a new intersection here with traffic lights and left turning lanes. The traffic lights will be synchronized to ensure the best possible flow of traffic along Route 20 to the Union Avenue traffic lights. The interior commercial part of the redevelopment provides for walkability, a strong sense of place, well-landscaped, inviting exterior common spaces. A positive vote tonight will allow uses in these commercial buildings, such as restaurants, which are not currently allowed by zoning. And this is another view of the rendering of that commercial area and the retail part, which is in the front of the property. Moving on to the grocery store. The grocery store plan has already received site plan approval from the planning board and can proceed regardless of tonight's town meeting decisions, as it is presently allowed under current zoning at the site. But the grocery store design was developed to fit with the overall design of the other commercial spaces at the project site. Moving on, behind the retail commercial area in the middle of the site on the eastern side is the memory care assisted living facility. Now, we should note here that the design of this facility, along with the commercial spaces already referenced, have changed substantially over the many planning board and design review board meetings that have taken place on this project to better reflect the community interests as expressed in those meetings. So the plans as they exist now are very different from what we first saw as a planning board many months ago. Finally, moving beyond the memory care assisted living to the age-restricted condominiums, two types. There would be 60 age-restricted condominiums that are proposed in the northeast corner of the property, providing two different types of housing and price ranges for our growing senior population. So that is a little background on the project itself.
Dan Carty, also with the Planning Board.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Dan Carty, Stonebrook Road, and member of the Planning Board. So I'm going to try to paint the picture, the financial picture to this complicated project. And I was reminded by my colleague Chris Morley in one of our meetings a couple weeks ago of a great Einstein quote, make everything as simple as possible, but no simpler. So with that in that spirit, I'm going to attempt to paint the financial picture of all the pieces here. So again, starting with a picture that you've seen already, just from a kind of an order of magnitude of the size of this property. For me, I hadn't thought about the Gillette Stadium reference. I thought simpler than that, walking down Route 20 and looking to my right and seeing the large Shaw's building. Not sure why this isn't. Whoops. Seeing the large Shaw's complex, which should be shown in the yellow oval. And then looking to the other side of the street and seeing the massive Raytheon property across the street. So gives you a picture of what the size of it's going to be. And also with the arrow up in the top, that little notch is the fire station that folks are probably familiar with. And importantly, that's going to be brought up in Article 3, and that little notch is going to be made a little bit bigger with Article 3. Okay? So to start with, some facts that you've already seen some of these is the property's 50 acres, has 550,000 square feet of building space in there and 2,200 parking spaces. From a financial perspective, the fact here is that we know that Raytheon historically has been our largest taxpayer in town, and really to the tune of we collect $633,000 and change from them. There is some municipal cost involved with that to about $69,000. And the bottom line is it means $564,000 into our pocket in 2016. The other fact is that they're closing, okay? So another important fact here is the property that sits on is currently zoned as limited industrial. And I stress the word limited there, because with living in industrial, we are really limited with what we can and cannot do on that property. Thus, we come to you with a request for a zoning change. Okay. Another fact here is that the property is sold. Okay. The property has already been sold, and it's been sold to a joint venture by National Development and Avalon Bay. And like I said, this is a complicated project, so you're going to hear National Development and Avalon Bay, different pieces of the project. They all weave together into one large project here. Okay. Now, when we met with the FinCom a couple weeks ago, the comment was made that, well, what would happen if nothing was done with that property? And I thought about that, and I said, that's probably a really good place to start when we're painting the financial picture here. And in the unlikely event that nothing was done with that property, okay, basically the buildings would be abandoned, there'd probably be a fence be put up around it, and that $564,000 would start to come down pretty significantly. Okay, abatements, the whole abatement process, so people are aware, has already started, meaning that $564,000 on that property as a Raytheon property is never going to get any higher than that. Okay, so what are our plans? Okay, again, with the picture here, I'm going to overlay what the new development will look like right on top of it. And I'm going to try to step through the different pieces of this and what the financial aspects of each one of those are. Okay? So don't anybody hold me to the exact placement of these yellow lines. It's really there for reference purposes. But as you've heard already a couple times tonight, the top part of this is really the 40B aspect. And I can't stress enough, we're not voting on this tonight. Okay? It is not part of the vote. Okay, but it plays a very important part in the overall project here because it has a big financial aspect to it. Okay, so it's not part of the vote, and people should assume for the sake of the financial picture that it's going to happen. Okay, so if that happens, what does that mean from a financial perspective? Okay, so in talking with the developer, and of course the developer has their own consultants that do all these calculations. This isn't the type of project that we do every day, so we need to do our due diligence, and we have our own consultants that peer review their figures, okay? And then we've met with the FinCom as well to get their perspective on all this. So if we look at really ranges here, okay, from here on out, I'm going to be talking about estimates, okay? Our consultants, their consultants, the FinCom, we've all got different estimates here, so I'm going to be providing ranges, really, of what's likely to happen. So when we're looking at the tax revenue specific to the 40B, the Avalon Bay piece of this, we're looking in the ballpark of about $800,000, okay? And that's been pretty well agreed upon between the various consultants. And then there's municipal costs that are going to be part of that as well, and they're in the range $227,000 to $235,000 a year, okay? Where this starts to get really interesting financially and the ranges are going to start to get bigger is when we talk about educational costs. Okay. Our consultants and the developers' consultants, you know, looking at other types of projects like these in similar towns, think that it's going to mean about 65 students into 65 new students into that development. Okay. Now, the education costs there, you're going to see a pretty big range of $624,000 up to about $1.1 million per year. And that really has to do with accounting, which I'm not an accountant. Okay. But the $624,000 looks at it from the perspective of, well, we've got 65 new kids coming in across 13 grades, which really means probably about 5 kids per grade. So we can kind of slot them in and really just look at the variable cost of these things as opposed to the fixed costs. Okay. Now, the FinCom, when we met with them, said, well, we count it. You know, really, we take the total school cost, divide by the number of school children, and come up with about $17,000 per student. So, you know, the truth of the matter is both numbers are important, okay, and it's probably going to fall somewhere in between those two numbers, okay? So think $624,000 on the low end, $1.1 million on the high end, okay? And from a bottom line perspective, excuse me, is if all we did with this project is let the 250 apartments go in, we're looking at a burden, okay, tax burden of between $29,000 and $544,000, okay? So take that into account with the $564,000 that we used to get from Raytheon, and I call that the annual gut punch, really, right? Because we could be facing a $1 million shortfall on the high end, okay? So that's not the only thing that's happening with this project, obviously. So as you've already heard, from Mr. Hebert, is there's also a grocery store going in. Now, I also want to make it clear we're not voting on this tonight either, okay? But again, it is part of the financial picture. So the grocery store has to be allowed by current zoning. It's not part of the vote, and it may or may not happen, depending on what happens here tonight with the vote. But standing on its own, if we look at the grocery store on its own, it has a positive impact to us financially. So we're looking at tax revenues of about $162,000 a year, municipal costs of $47,000, which washes out to a net positive of $115,000 per year. Okay, so that starts to chip away at that 250 apartment drain. Okay, but it doesn't clear it all up. Okay, so there needs to be more. So where we are right now, if it's just 250 apartments in a grocery store, we're looking at being $86,000 above to $429,000 below, somewhere in that range, again, all depending on what the actual cost for the education of the students is. Okay, so therefore, we're talking now about this mixed-use overlay district. And what does that mean when we look at the picture here? So when we think about what can we do about this, it's, okay, so if we start to talk about adding in the retail, and you'll see the yellow rectangle is really the retail portion of the picture, okay? And again, these yellow boxes are approximate. Don't anybody hold me to the actual geography of these, okay? The yellow triangle is where we're talking about the memory care facility, and then the rectangle down in the bottom is where we get into the age-restricted condominiums. And these are sold, not rented, okay? So these three things, we think, we're pretty confident, and those are going to help to wash out some of the costs. So the important thing to know is without the zoning change, the bottom half of this picture can't happen, okay? The 250 apartments can and probably will. The grocery store can and might. Okay, the bottom can't happen without the zoning change. Okay, so this is what we're voting on tonight, is really allowing that bottom part to come in. Okay, so why do we want to do this? And again, from a financial perspective, okay, well, again, with our consultants and the developers' consultants, we're both pretty close to say, you know, here's where we think the tax revenues are going to be for these pieces. So we're looking at tax revenues of, you know, between $724,000 and $890,000. Municipal costs are going to be much lower here. We don't expect any educational costs in the memory care facility in the over 55 community. Okay. But there will be municipal costs, obviously. So there'll be, you know, $164,000 to $167,000 in municipal costs. So the net benefit of this bottom part of the picture, if we did that on its own, would be in the range of $557,000 to $726,000, give or take. Okay. So if we put this all together with the Whole Foods and the 250 apartments up on the top, again, now we have this range. We're going to get above, okay? We're pretty confident we're going to get above and actually make money on this, and there's a good chance that we can get to or past what the tax revenues from Raytheon were. But again, it's this range. It's somewhere in the ballpark between $127,600 and $812,000.
Chris Morley from the Planning Board. Blinking yellow means you have 3 minutes and 45 seconds.
Yes, Mr. Moderator, and I was going to ask you about that.
Well,
is it premature to ask for...
Go ahead and see how we do.
Oh, no, there are other people after me, okay. So is it premature to ask for 10 more minutes ahead
premature.
Of time?
It is
premature.
Quite
okay.
Premature, yes.
Okay. I don't know procedure. All right. The MUOD, as I like to call it, Mixed-Use Overlay District. So how did we get here? The idea originally really was trying to make Route 20 both provide us more taxes, the business part of Route 20, but also to be more enjoyable and useful to the residents of Sudbury. So over the last 20 years, studies have been done, discussions have been had, public meetings with the public have been had. We kept hearing at public meetings the same thing that consultants were telling us, which is whenever they have a public meeting about this issue, everyone wants to have downtown Concord or downtown Lexington. Now, unfortunately, everyone can't get that. And one consultant we had showed us that downtown Lexington fits into the Star Market Park, the Shaw's parking lot. So it really is an unrealistic expectation. But what we can get is more of a Main Street development feel. So where the buildings are not set back like the current Raytheon is, that nice big green lawn doesn't let you feel like Route 20 is your downtown. It's there because of the current zoning. We would change that tonight. The idea is that along Route 20, if we can make it feel more like a downtown we all want to live in, even if it is much longer than most, that would be a good thing. So that's really why we're here tonight with the overlay district. So the solution is the overlay district that allows standards to change to reflect that. I'm trying to be fast. I'm just trying to cut things in my head. I'm sorry. Another key point is the rigorous process that we have built into this. Normally, in the past, in the time I've been here, if there's a zoning change, we come before this call and we tell them, oh, we think it would be better and we might attract something if we do this to the zoning. But we're hoping something will happen and we're trying to be extremely careful, but we don't know exactly what will happen in the future. This process, with the Raytheon property tonight, and in the future, should someone want to redevelop, say, the corner of Knobscot Road and Route 20, they would have to come through the same process, which is to get a 4/5 vote from the planning board, to get a contract negotiated with the selectmen, to get approval from 2/3 of town meeting. So way more rigorous than the existing way the zoning works. And also more rigorous than the usual just commercial site plan review that we have done over the years with the selectmen and more recently switched to the planning board. All of which may be in the next slide that I hadn't switched to, but my bad. So importantly on this slide, what it does not allow. Again, as everyone has tried to emphasize, the 40B multifamily rental housing, luxury and affordable combo is not allowed under the zoning that we're approving here tonight. That is a separate process in this spot through the 40B process. What is allowed, you can read yourselves up there. I will repeat something Susan talked about, which is that the selectmen and the planning board had asked the developers specifically for quality restaurants. It's very, very hard for our business property owners. Finish that sentence, and then I can ask for more.
How much more time do you need?
10 minutes.
Is that just for
not
you?
Me? No. The whole thing.
10 minutes. Who else is speaking? How many more speakers do you have? Okay. And who else? Just you two? Susan. Okay. So the proponents of Article 1, 2, and 3 have asked for an additional 10 minutes. Does anyone object to that? All those in favor of giving the proponents an additional 10 minutes of presentation time, raise your cards. All those opposed? That passes nearly unanimously and by well more than two-thirds. Please continue, Mr. Moore.
I totally forget the point I was going to make. Yes, the restaurants. Someone just the other day said to me, why can't we get nice restaurants like Concord has? She didn't mention the downtown that Concord has, too. But for our business property owners, that it's a very wet part of town. Our wells are nearby, and it's just very hard for them to deal with the septic system issue. We don't have a town sewer. At this particular property, Raytheon already has a wastewater treatment plant, and the developer will be bringing that treatment plant up to 21st century standards. So they will be able to have restaurants. Now, there's no guarantee that they will find tenants who want to pay the right amount, et cetera, but that is the plan, to have restaurants. Let's move to materials we reviewed over 20 meetings. I'm glad someone was counting. You can read them yourselves. The planning board has reviewed all of this work, engineering, architectural, the peer reviews. So we have the developer comes to us with their consultants who tell us all these things, and then the town has hired our own consultants so we can have our own consultants tell us what they think about the other person's consultants. It's very interesting, a lot of work, and actually a huge amount of cooperation through this whole process. Other boards that have reviewed the materials.
Excuse me for a second, Chris.
Yep.
Please silence all your cell phones or any other item that will make noise and interrupt the proceedings. Thank you. Please continue.
Sure. Other boards and town staff that have reviewed the materials include the CONCOM, Design Review Board, Sudbury Water District, Sudbury Board of Health, the DPW, the Fire Department, the Building Inspector. And the Planning Board, as specified in the Article 1 Zoning Overlay District proposed, has to take all of that information and provide a conformance review, a conformance recommendation. And in that recommendation, we say that all of the material that we received and all of the plans conform to what the bylaw requires. And as Pete said at the beginning of his remarks, after discussions with the water district in the cafeteria, we made the final unanimous vote to approve the conformance review that we had typed. And it is a done deal. There are over 55 conditions. I think the slide still says 50, but there are five more. So there are over 55 conditions, stormwater management conditions, traffic improvements, public amenities, requirements for dark sky lighting, noise restrictions, architectural plans, operating and maintenance procedures, performance bonds, et cetera, et cetera. Like a huge, massive site plan review for a new drugstore, only writ large. That is it for me, and Steve is going to take 2 minutes.
He actually has 7 minutes and 45 seconds.
Susan, I'm sorry.
I'm here to talk about the development agreement. This is something that's required under the overlay district for any project. It's a contract between the developer and the town, and all mitigation and other project commitments between the developer and the town are memorialized in this document, and it's tied into the conformance recommendation. Get the list of stuff. Okay, our negotiation team, I would like to thank our team, which is Bob Hardy on behalf of the selectmen, our town manager, town council, Chris Morley on behalf of the planning board, and town planner Jody Kablak, worked very carefully with the development team, which represented a collaboration between National Development and Avalon Bay. And they went through many meetings and many iterations, which resulted in a strong agreement providing many benefits for the town over and above those you've heard about tonight. So you can see the list up here. There are mitigation payments that cover a wide range of town benefits, including sports field safety improvements, senior transportation, improved technology in the schools and municipal buildings. And one particularly important piece is the donation of land close to the adjacent to the existing fire station so that we can expand that in the future, as well as a contribution of design funds for that as well. There's $100,000 for unanticipated fiscal requirements that might come up in the Zoning Board of Appeals process. That's within their purview. Should that not happen, this money will still go to the town to help us address impacts as we see fit. There are also other improvements, including a section of the sidewalk, and you've also heard about the traffic mitigation that's in the conformance agreement.
Thank you. Steve Garvin, Planning Board.
Good evening. I guess I have more than 2 minutes, but I'll still read quickly. The first item I'm here to wrap up is what is needed from town meeting tonight. One, to approve the language of the MOAD bylaw and inclusion of the Raytheon property into the overlay district. That's on pages 2 through 12 of your warrant. Number two is Article 2, which is the approval of the master development plan. That's a large centerfold plan in your warrant. It shows the components of the development, the retail being in purple, the memory assisted living in orange, and the age-restricted housing in green in the back. Both these articles require two-thirds vote of town meeting. We hope we've presented enough to you in this 30-plus minutes to make you feel good and comfortable about these decisions. The master development plan includes reference by the planning board conditions in the conformance review, as well as the development agreement negotiated with the selectmen. The third article has to do with the acquisition of lands and easements that would allow for the fire department to be expanded, fire station number two, and also any easements required for that. This grant of land is part of the negotiation with the selectmen. What are the consequences of no? The loss of revenue has been discussed quite well. It would result in the property laying in disuse, which would not produce substantial tax revenue nor offset any of the tax revenue. The majority of the revenue, as you've seen from Dan's review, is really being brought about by the three pieces being voted on tonight. No vote would also significantly impair the ability to effectively redevelop this lost site, and this would be quite a lost opportunity for the town. Timing is everything in development. Right now, there are favorable market conditions that allows this. We can't be sure that will hold true in the future. I would like to stress, as mentioned a few times tonight, that the 40B Avalon component is going forward regardless of town vote. Some of the concerns we've heard, and we've heard a number, and I've attempted to answer them quite much. I'm going to go quickly. I think I'm at 2 minutes. It will cause traffic backups. There's a new signal with controls at Union and Obscott. There's a monitoring we've put forth to be come after 6 months of development to ensure what we've asked for comes and is actually being provided. Will this allow for more multifamily housing along Route 20? The MOAD does not allow multifamily housing. The Avalon project should be smaller. Actually, it gets us over the 10%, which is 234 units. Will it hurt other Sudbury businesses? The businesses have come to us, we've heard, and are excited for all these residents to be added within walking distance. Environmental concerns. It's been peer-reviewed. Four LSPs, which are licensed site professionals, have reviewed this as well as DEP and have all felt comfortable with it. There is spot zoning as a question. That is, Raytheon is a distinguishable site with public benefit and can be extended. I think at that point we're going to move to the MOAD support. That support was given by seven boards along with the Sudbury Water District that is not on the board in front of you. Finally, we recommend a yes vote on the MOAD and master plan development. We really recommend this a vote of yes this evening, and thank you very much.
Thanks, Steve. Okay, before we move forward here, I notice there's a lot of people standing over here on the side. The balcony is open, plenty of seating. If you'd like to go upstairs and sit down, the view is just fine up there as well. Folks as well in the back over here, if you'd like to find a seat upstairs, please feel free to do so. Sometimes easier for me to count votes that are close if people are seated as opposed to moving around and standing. So If you do want me to count your vote, you might want to go sit down. Okay, we're going to proceed and discuss Article 1 at this point with respect to recommendations that are required by the Board of Selectmen and the FinCom, but then we'll open it up to discussion on all aspects of Articles 1, 2, and 3. So, Board of Selectmen have a position on Article 1.
The Board of Selectmen supports this article.
FinCom, position on Article 1.
The Finance Committee unanimously recommends approval of Article 1 as a way to promote development of underutilized land to, among other things, increase the value of these properties while maintaining tight control on each parcel proposed to the Planning Board for consideration as a mixed-use overlay district.
Susan, the first few sentences that you spoke were not audible. Could you say that again, please?
The whole thing?
If you want.
Okay. The Finance Committee unanimously recommends approval of Article 1 as a way to promote development of underutilized land to, among other things, increase the value of these properties while maintaining tight control on each parcel proposed to the Planning Board for consideration as a mixed-use overlay district.
Thank you. For the record, Mr. Hebert, could you report the Planning Board's position on Article 1?
The Planning Board unanimously favors Article 1.
Excellent. Discussion. Who wants to be heard on the motion under Article 1? Please raise your cards. Yes, sir. Please stand. Get a mic. Can we get a mic to this gentleman right here, standing in the second row? Boy Scouts, hello? Right here? Come around. Okay. Thank you.
Jim Gish, 35 Rolling Lane. I may have missed it, but was there a motion under Article 1?
Was there a motion under Article 1?
Okay, I missed it. Sorry.
Good question. I didn't remember. Thank you. That's the point of a point of order. If there's something that's missed, raise it. Who wants to be heard on Article 1? Right here, this gentleman. Please get him a mic. Thank you.
I'm Christopher Fry, 71 Dudley Road in Sudbury. I think there's some good things and some bad things about this. There's tremendous opportunity here, but there's tremendous problems. I would characterize everything I've heard here tonight and everything I've read on the web and in pamphlets and stuff as think locally, act locally. So I think that's half right. I got another idea. Think globally, act locally. We've heard a lot about money on this. Money's a difficult problem, and I commend all of you who have worked on financing. It's really hard to get the numbers straight. I believe you. I think you've done a good job. Money is single-dimensional. Think about the health care costs from the additional pollution that's going to be caused from the site, or not even the additional pollution, just the same pollution. If we keep doing business as usual, we will all die. The planet's going down. You know, there's a thing called climate change going on. Okay, I have three specific areas that I want to talk about: transportation, water, and electricity. My former job was at MIT. I was a research scientist. I worked in part on transportation infrastructure. The proposal for transportation in this is put in a traffic light. That's embarrassing. I would be happy to help anybody on this project with ideas about transportation. They're more complicated than I can say now. Next, on water, one of the good things about this project is they're handling all the wastewater on site. That's great. No polluting the ocean and all that stuff, no sewer lines and all that. Bad thing is, they could use the water that falls on the site as the input water. 40 inches falls on Massachusetts every year, and there's plenty of water to do all the housing there. Finally, on electricity. In Massachusetts, you can get a deduction for putting solar panels on your roofs, but you can't get it if you have shaded roofs from trees and stuff. Only about 10% of Massachusetts homes qualify for this. Mine, unfortunately, is not one of them, and probably yours isn't too. But there's another option called community solar, where if you have a large site where you can clear it, like this site with lots of parking lots and roofs and stuff, you can put panels there. And my guess is this site could supply not only the electricity for itself, but also for some of the surrounding neighborhoods. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Fry. Who else wishes to be heard on Article 1? Come on, right over here. Gentlemen, stand up. Mr. Surratt, thank you.
Mr. Moderator, when I see the amount of money that's being
offered... Mr. Surratt, name and address, please.
Hank Surratt, 58 Longfellow Road. Mr. Moderator, when I see the amount of money that's being offered the town, and I see the scope of the development, I become an instant skeptic. When I was first in this town in 1978, there was an elderly gentleman by the name of George Hamm, who was probably younger then than I am now. And Mr. Hamm made the argument against the taking away of our driving range on Route 20, that is now a mall, that if we allowed the increasing commercial development of Route 20, it would become the duplicate of Marlboro. While I think we have to have 40B development, and this is a wonderful site for it, the rest of it I would oppose completely and urge the rejection of these articles.
Thank you, Mr. Surratt. Who else wishes to be heard on Article 1? Gentleman right here. Stand up, please.
Good evening. Robert Crane, 17 Trailside Circle. So I'm a direct abutter of the Raytheon site. I'm right on the back of this development. And I accept the fact that this site is going to be developed. It's 50 acres. It's in a great location within Sudbury, and I just want to get developed the right way. So I've had the good fortune of being able to speak with some of these developers. I've also visited some of their sites, and I do concur that the work they do is of the highest quality. I've certainly been aware of Avalon Bay for many, many years and believe that they'll do a good job. I believe that complaints regarding traffic are really empty complaints in light of viable alternatives. And I believe that what we have here is a plan that certainly there will be some additional traffic, but in the absence of a viable alternative, just having more traffic and complaints about it doesn't mean anything to me. I believe this development is a positive for Sudbury. I think we're in great need of high-quality restaurants in our town. I also believe that Whole Foods will be a great positive for the town, and I believe having the memory care and having the aged, the age-limited housing is also a positive. I've had many encounters with the people, the developers. I find them of high integrity. I find them honest, and I believe that they will deliver what they say. And for all these reasons, I support this development. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cray. Who else wishes to be heard? Anyone over here? Anyone at all? This woman right here. Can you stand up, please?
I'm Martha Stone, 41 Chanticleer Road. I'm just wondering, just to educate myself, is there anything about this article that will either set a precedent for other development that we're all concerned about at present? Sudbury Station, for example, or will doing this with the 43B, the 40B housing remove one of their advantages to developing that property?
Okay, good question. Someone from the planning board want to handle that? Mr. Morley.
The short answer is no. So the way it works is that 40B developments can apply. There's the whole process to go through. And until they are approved at the end of that process, if they are approved, then and Sudbury still is not at their 10%, which we are not, other people may apply as well. So actually Sudbury Station applied first, Raytheon redevelopers applied, and the Coolidge property at the corner of Landham and Route 20 is also going to apply for an addition. All three will have to be dealt with in the way that the 40B laws prescribe.
Does that answer your question?
Did that answer everything, or did you have more?
No.
Please stand. Get a mic.
Is any one of these projects by itself going to meet our obligation?
Mr. Morley.
I'm sorry, I was getting hints. So what was the question?
Is any one of those three that you mentioned, this one in particular, going to meet Sudbury's obligation, fulfill our 10%?
This will meet the 10% if the ZBA approves it, and if they approve it at 250 units, it will meet the 10% estimated through the 2020 reporting period. There's another reporting period for the 2030 timeframe.
And does that obviate the need to add more 40B? We can add more than 10%, presumably?
We can certainly add more than 10%, but again, the other two are independent of this one.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, anyone in the nether regions of the balcony wish to be heard? We have two Boy Scouts out there just itching to do some service. Anybody want to be heard in the balcony? No? Okay. Over here. All right, here we go. This gentleman right on the end.
Terry Powers, 142 Pantry Road. My impression is that the apartments are happening regardless. This has nothing to do with the apartments, and this has been very educational, by the way. I appreciate the time that you folks put into this. So knowing that the apartments are happening, the ability to offset the costs with these projects is substantial. And frankly, I'm a big fan of the mixed use. I liked the retail that I saw. I liked the walkable space that I saw in the presentation that I saw from the developer. So I'm a fan, and I can't speak to the traffic concerns, but I was also impressed in the conversation that I had in terms of being able to time the traffic, adding the light, and so on. So,
thank you, sir. Anyone? This gentleman right here in the middle. I know that's an impossible mic transfer, but why don't you just slide it down the row?
Hi, I'm Glenn Merrill Skoloff. I'm at 18 Allen Place.
Sorry, can you say that one more time, please?
Yes, my name is Glenn Merrill Skoloff. I'm at 18 Allen Place. And I have a concern about potable water and water used for lawns and plantings, et cetera. I think we have a terrible water problem in this town. We're already under a water ban. And it looked to me like there were a lot of green spaces and commercial green spaces, and I'm not sure what the zoning water use for all of that is, but I know that all of the existing commercial properties seem to use sprinklers and use them fairly indiscriminately. I assume the same would be here as well. 250 extra units in the 40B plus however many units otherwise, it's a substantial water use burden. And can someone comment on how the town plans to meet that new demand?
Okay. Someone from the planning board want to address that? Mr. Garvin.
So that was a concern of the town and the planning board, and one of the 55 conditions, or it might actually be two, speak to that, that there's only wells allowed for irrigation. Potable water is not allowed without approval. Irrigation will be all done by irrigation wells. This was supported by the water district also.
You all set? Does that answer your question?
It doesn't really address the residential water use.
Okay, can you restate that part of your question, please?
Sure. So there's clearly the, as I have used addressed for the irrigation purposes, but there's talk of a lot of housing units. I know the 40B is sort of off the table here, but as we've all said, this is a very big integrated project, and just because we're not voting on it tonight doesn't mean it doesn't have impact on what we are voting on. And there's a lot of residential units going up. Has anyone done any feasibility of another well? I mean, we just don't have enough water for the residents we have now.
Great question. So that's been studied. There's been a peer review regarding that. The Water District's peer review consultant has reviewed it also, and they have stated that there is enough water for this development.
Okay, thank you. I see Ms. Eggleston of the Water District rising. Lisa Eggleston.
Thank you. Just to add to what Steve said, Lisa Eggleston of the Sudbury Water District. And just to clarify a couple of things, because I think there's some confusion in terms of what causes our water restrictions. And whether this project is going to impact that. And I just want to assure you that the Water District has looked very closely at that. We've also had our own peer reviewer looking very closely at it, both in terms of the water quality impacts on our well, because this is a large development in our zone too, and from the standpoint of the demand and providing the water supply. The type of development that this is, with the residential, the congregate residential development, the, specifically the 40B type, actually would lessen the likelihood of our having water restrictions. The reason being that our water restrictions are set by the state based on per capita water use. So it's a matter of our total water use divided by our total population. And when you have a development like this with common open spaces instead of the individual single-family lots that are prevalent in Sudbury, the overall water use tends to be lower. It also tends to be lower in households that don't have children. So there's fewer children in some of the residential developments that are proposed here. So from that standpoint, it actually is less likely to cause, to put us into a restriction. That's not saying that we don't have, that we have unlimited water supply. We do not. This project is also what I think is going to be the standard for our future developments, in that it not only reduces the impervious surface on the site, but they are putting a lot more into the ground with their stormwater management. They are integrating one of the conditions that we as a water district requested and has been put into the planning board's approval is looking at water reuse on the site. They will not be allowed to connect to the potable water supply for irrigation unless they've completely exhausted any options for water reuse. Even we've had discussions with them about using gray water, which is kind of reusing water from the site to do things like irrigation or flush toilets and so forth. All of that's on the table, and we will be working with them to ensure that this is a very progressive and sustainable development.
Okay, Mr. Merrill-Skoloff, are you satisfied?
Yeah.
Okay, excellent. Right over here, woman in the white, please. Please stand.
Carolyn Lee, 28 Mossman Road.
Can you say that one more time, please?
Carolyn Lee, 28 Mossman Road.
Thank you.
I'd just like to be clear that overall I'm very supportive of this, but one of the things, questions that I've got vis-a-vis all these finance numbers is about what happens if it isn't full. The Raytheon site in Wayland is still not full. There's a lot of empty retail space there. There's a lot of other empty retail space in this town. So what is the impact on these financial projections if we end up with the same density of not full as Raytheon and Wayland has?
Okay, Mr. Carty, you want to address that? See if that mic works.
Yeah, I mean, as I said earlier when I was going through the finances, at that point, it's, you know, other than the facts of the Raytheon tax that we are taking in, everything else beyond that is estimates. I mean, a lot of that is going to, a lot of those numbers are really going to play into what the properties are valued at. It may be higher, it may be lower. We will be collecting tax of some kind on that property, whether or not they are, all the apartments are rented or not, or whether the condos are sold or not. And then I think just the market will control some of the valuation of the property. Does that help?
Does that answer your question, Ms. Lee?
One other item. There's 160,000 square feet of retail in Wayland. There's half of that here, and that includes the Whole Foods. So National Development has vetted this with experts and feel this is the appropriate amount. They know and understand this market. We've actually pushed them to add more. They added a little bit more from the original, but it's much smaller retail-wise than Wayland.
Appreciate the enthusiasm, Mr. Garvin. Please wait for me to recognize you next time to speak. Right here. Please stand.
Karen Gadarian, 16 Rena Road. I have a question about how long this is going to take if all three of these articles are approved. when the project is slated to start and how long it would take and how long the residents of Sudbury would have to kind of put up with the construction process.
Okay, a couple of questions on logistics. Anyone from the planning board on that? Mr. Morley.
There will be, if we approve this tonight, there will be work going on there very quickly, starting with demolition. The first thing that will be built will be the Whole Foods store and the infrastructure that requires us to get to the Whole Foods store. The developer has a plan laid out, which we have. I don't have it in front of me, but it's 2 to 3 years, 3 to 4, for everything to finally be done. And we all know when we work on our houses, it's never quite done when you think it's going to be done. So let's say 3 to 4, and hope for 2 to 3.
Okay. Gentleman right here. I'm going to get to the balcony in a minute.
Hi. Whoa. Rich Gallup, 11 Shady Hill Lane. Just a couple comments. I do also think this is a good deal. I'm feeling good about it. But because a fellow resident said he's not worried about traffic, I just wanted it on the record that I am worried about the traffic, because me and my 3-year-old and 1-year-old walk on Dudley all the time, and we walk on Route 20 all the time, and those are both horrible experiences due to the traffic and the speed at which it moves. So when a new light goes into for this development, if more traffic starts zooming down Dudley, I'm counting on everyone here up on the stage to make sure we revisit that and do right by it. And also, I think it would be great if we had more sidewalks than just that little bit we're putting in, because walking from the Shaw's Plaza, or the snack store, as my son calls it, to Sudbury Farms, a.k.a. the ice cream store, as my son calls it, is just not fun. And it'd be great if you guys help us out with that. So, thank you.
Thanks. Okay, there was a gentleman. Yes, right here. Mr. Boy Scout, can we get over here to this side? There you go.
Hi, it's Terry Keeney, 71 Blueberry Hill Lane.
Can you say that one more time, please? Sorry.
Terry Keeney.
Thank you.
Has there been any study that will show what this new development will, how or if it will impact any of the existing businesses in Sudbury?
How this development will impact existing businesses. Any thought put into that issue, members of the planning board? Mr. Hebert.
My answer would be the input that we have received from businesses in the community is supportive, and that factored in our discussions with the planning board. We had some of the similar discussions, and we have heard positive things from other business owners about this potentially providing incentive for them to reinvest in their properties as well.
Excellent. Mr. Morley.
Just to follow up, because it also answers your previous question about sidewalks. So this development actually has a quite positive impact upon the Shaw's Plaza. Currently, they don't have a sidewalk on their frontage, but there will be plantings and sidewalk on their frontage, pedestrian crossings with buttons. The sidewalk will continue all the way to Knobscart Road, which is almost getting your son to the ice cream store. And the Shaw's, I understand that the Shaw's has re-signed a long-term lease. Their lease was coming due, and they signed a long-term lease knowing that Whole Foods was going to be across the street.
Thank you. There's a gentleman in the back row in a green shirt. Please stand up so the Boy Scout can get a mic to you.
Hey. Neil Droas, Colonial Road. I've been trying to understand how the aesthetic looks of this development, and the only thing I can rely upon is what they built over in Wayland. And I know Wayland is substantially larger than what's being proposed here, but can someone give us an idea of when you go into this plaza, are you going to see residentials all the way in the back? Is there going to be lots of open parking space in the front? Is it going to be much more homogeneous looking and more pleasant looking than what they did in Wayland?
Mr. Hebert, compare and contrast Wayland Town Center.
Well, as noted, one, we're talking about a smaller retail development. And in some of the early slides presented, we showed some of the renderings and want to emphasize again, what you see is what you get. The developer is really tied, for the most part, to what these renderings suggest. And so the way this project works in terms of the user, the customer, the member of town who visits this site is, maybe I should take that. There we go. So as you enter the site here, one, well landscaped, as you saw in one of the previous slides, you saw some outdoor landscaping, outdoor seating area, some different opportunities for common space use, potentially civic events. And so forth, wide pedestrian walkways throughout the project that really link not only Whole Foods to the commercial, but also the commercial to the other residential aspects. This is really designed for walkability, and that's something that we stressed from the outset. I mentioned in my earlier remarks, some of the first renderings we saw was too strip mall-y, not what we wanted, and we didn't want Wayland Town Center, whatever it's called. We wanted a development where you go in, you park, and you can walk to multiple aspects of the different retail buildings. It's intended to be an inviting streetscape, very accessible to pedestrians, also linking to, we hope, a future infrastructure, including bikeways and so forth. There is a plan in terms of providing for bicycles. There's a plan, should there be public transportation assets coming to Sudbury, there's one of the conditions includes space for that kind of transfer, in terms of a bus loading and unloading. So it really is intended to be much more of a village center where people can walk from one asset to the other, rather than get in your car on one end, drive to the other end. This is absolutely intended to be very walkable and accessible for a lot of different users.
Mr. Drowis, does that get to your question?
Absolutely.
Thank you, sir. Right here. Another impossible mic transfer. Sorry.
Terry Snyder, Barton Drive. I've got a question about the buildings that they're going to build. Are they going to be like LEED Green or LEED Silver or LEED Platinum? What kind of, is there going to be geothermal? Is there going to be solar panels? How are these buildings built?
Mr. Garvin.
So there's been no promise from LEED. They will meet, as Sudbury has to meet the stretch code for our building code. And for the most part, my experience in design is stretch code is very similar to LEED Silver level from an energy perspective. The developer may look to do more LEED-related items added to the design, but as of now, they will be required at a minimum to meet our stretch code, which really provides for a very progressive energy design.
That's not how we do it. You may recall from town meeting that there's a new procedure for calling the question. If someone wants to make a motion to call the question, that's how we will proceed. Yes, sir. Mr. DePompei.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Dan DePompei, 35 Haynes Road. First of all, I'd like to say I support all the goals we're trying to achieve with this project. I think we're long overdue in doing that. However, I can't convince myself that my support is enough, and I have some questions about our infrastructure. And I have been going back and forth with the Water District, Ms. Becky McEnroe, primarily there on the water supply side. My concerns are both on the water supply side and on the discharge side. On the water supply side, there's a lot of correspondence that presents different numbers, but I'll use the numbers that Ms. McEnroe confirmed in a correspondence with me that were correct, and that is the increased water usage at this site, as proposed, is 56,000 to 62,000 gallons per day. You can find numbers far exceeding that in the correspondence, but basically if you factor everything in, it's roughly 56,000 to 62,000 gallons per day. That far exceeds the current use. Current use is about 15,000 gallons per day. So the first thing I'm going to question is if in fact we currently have water restrictions and we have historically had water restrictions for the last 10 years, even though the calculations may be based on number of residents, the water usage is definitely going to go up. And in fact, if we think a little bit further ahead and we look at other projects that are in the pipeline, there's another 48,000 gallon per day project in the near future. So we're looking at a near-term potential increase in water usage of 100,000 to 115,000 gallons per day. One of the letters that Ms. McEnroe sent to the developer was she was concerned about water usage, and that concern was based on the fact that we were currently within 10% of our maximum allowable water withdrawal unit from DEP. I asked the question, I didn't get an answer yet. I'm sure she's been very busy the last couple of days. But now my question becomes, well, as we approach that limit and as we hit that limit, what is our backup plan for additional water since we've been growing constantly for the last 10 years? So I don't know what the answer to that question is. I did get an email that basically said, well, we'll ask the state for more water. I think I need, the response was, we'll ask the state for more water. Apparently, there may be more water out there. You just have to ask for it. I'm not familiar with the process, but basically, I think we haven't really researched that part of the equation in terms of existing infrastructure or water resource, water as a resource. The other question I have in terms of a resource is, if you look at the water usage, whatever we use, we treat. There's a plant at this site. It's a 50,000 gallon per day site. And we put it back into the ground. This entire site, as I understand the current bylaws and as I understand the Water Resource Overlay District, has some pretty strict requirements in terms of what we can put back into the ground. The requirements for this district, I think, are the max is 1,000 gallons per day per 40,000 square feet. So the water use at this site exceeds those requirements, too. At the last town meeting, the town planner presented an article to increase the size of the water treatment without requiring special permits. I didn't realize it at the time, but it looks like that was obviously connected to this site. In any case, we voted that down. So from what I can tell in the bylaws, those bylaws still apply in terms of the restrictions on what we can discharge back into the ground. So I love this project. I support everything we're trying to do. I love the concept of going to 40B, commercial-friendly real estate, positive revenue, but I'm extremely concerned about the water resource and about the Water Resource Overlay District. Thank you.
Okay, Mr. DePompei, would you hold the mic for a minute? Would you like your statement to stand as a rhetorical question, or would you like someone from the Sudbury Water District to address those questions?
No, if somebody can address it, please address it.
Okay. Is there Ms. Eggleston?
Thank you. Lisa Eggleston of the Sudbury Water District. I'm going to answer some of those questions. I think the one on the overlay district I'm going to defer to, I hope, our town planner. As far as the water demand, the numbers that I have are that this project's estimated water use is, and this is from their impact study that we required of them, the total estimated water use, including the Avalon Bay project, is between 58.5 and 65.5 thousand gallons per day. As you mentioned, the existing usage from the past several years that Raytheon was there was about 15,800 gallons per day. So yes, it is an increased water usage over certainly what they have been using. They've been in the process of downsizing for some time. The other number that I think is important to consider is the number that was presented to us, which is basically if the existing Raytheon facility were reoccupied under existing zoning, which basically could be office space and so forth, and the estimated water demand for that is 42,000 gallons per day. So that leaves a delta, if you will, between the reoccupied site and the current proposal of somewhere around 16,000 to 23,000 gallons per day. Yes, we are restricted by our Water Management Act permit in terms of how much we can withdraw. That number is currently 2.08 million gallons per day on average, and last year we pumped 1.88 million gallons per day. So we do have about 300,000 gallons of excess capacity in terms of what we are allowed to withdraw. Our wells have a lot more capacity. It's a matter of what we are permitted by the state to withdraw. And the State Water Management Act just underwent a whole new reconfiguration. It's now the Sustainable Water Management Act, which looks at the conditions in the watershed and other withdrawals and so forth. And the long and the short of it is that as we bump up against that upper limit, we are not going to be able to get permitted for more growth and for more demand unless we take steps as a community to mitigate the impacts, because the fact of the matter is the rivers are starting to get drier and so forth. So that will require, as I referred to earlier, kind of a different approach to development. And it requires things like putting a lot more water into the ground, which is why recharging the wastewater from this site is actually a good thing. What I forgot to mention is that they are treating that to what we refer to as best available technology level. It's a very high level of treatment. In fact, that was part of the negotiations with the Water District, was that the permit conditions that are likely to come from the state DEP on the wastewater treatment, we wanted to take it one step further, and that was written into the approval in terms of nitrate levels and so forth. This project's also reducing the impervious area and so forth. So from our standpoint, yes, we do have that limit. This is going to push into that excess capacity. We have not yet received the water impact study from the other 40B development that is in process. We haven't had those discussions, but I can assure you that we will be looking for the same standards in terms of water-saving devices, in terms of water conservation and recharge and mitigation and so forth. And no, Sudbury cannot grow uncontrollably and expect that we're going to be able to provide water you know, but I don't think that there are too many 50-acre sites left in this town that we're likely to be considering that. So in terms of the type of development from a water standpoint, this is, we feel, adequately mitigated.
Okay.
I think I covered most of the questions, but the question in terms of the actual count.
Okay. So we've been at this about an hour and 15 minutes. Is anybody getting the sense that we're moving towards a vote, or are there other people that want to ask questions? Okay, there's a couple people that want to ask questions, so let's take these folks that are in the back here. We'll take two or three more questions, and then I'll entertain a motion to call the question. Can we get some mics into this woman that's standing right by the pole, please? And if we could get a mic to this, there's a gentleman over here. Can we get him a mic so that he's ready to go as soon as she's done? Yes, ma'am.
Okay. My name is Susan Carlson. I live in Harrison House Lane. It sounds like I'm speaking really loudly.
You're doing terrific.
Am I?
Yes.
Oh, I'll try to whisper. I guess I shouldn't hold it so close.
No, hold it right at your chin.
Oh, okay. All right. I'm just surprised that I was watching this on TV, and no one has spoken against this. And so I would like to do that. Speak for anybody who's against this. I think that the man from the planning board who spoke at the beginning said that he was frequently asked why Sudbury can't have a town center like Lincoln, Lexington and Concord. And I've lived in this town since 1978. And this town could have had, it could be a town, it could have a center like those towns. But repeatedly, time and again, these kinds of developments have been just a disaster. The planning board or the zoning board approved of Cappy's Liquor Store, that pink thing in the middle of town. You know, wonderful, we're going to have a great big liquor store. It's an eyesore, it's a joke, and everyone seems to be dissatisfied with it. We have plenty of grocery stores in this town, and the reason...
Ms. Carlson, can I interrupt you for just a minute?
You may.
Ms. Carlson has the floor. So I would appreciate it if everyone would be quiet and respectfully listen to her while she has the floor.
Thank you.
Please continue.
So the gentleman from the planning board mentioned that people wonder why we can't have a town center like Concord. And the reason is because of developments like this. This is a reiteration of what Wayland did. Nobody I know in Wayland is happy with that development. I'm not sure what they call it, but it's a disaster. It's just, these are like strip malls gone ballistic. I don't see why this, and I also had another question. In whose interest is this? Is it in the interest of the residents, or is it in the interest of the town boards who are perpetually increasing, you know, just, you know, blowing up the budget so that, you know, they have more and more to do, more, you know. Why, this town, 35 years ago, had practically no town budget. It operated on a shoestring, and that was when the town had character. The town had character when it was not like Route 9. This is the worst thing. This development, we don't need any of the facilities. Whole Foods be damned. Who the hell needs Whole Foods? I mean,
Ms. Carlson,
we don't.
Ms. Carlson, I'm going to interrupt you now. I understand that you want to speak passionately about this, but you have to speak in language that you would be comfortable speaking to a child in. So,
thank you.
Let's do that.
I apologize. Anyway. The reason Lincoln and Lexington and Concord have attractive town centers that reflect the character and the history of those towns is because they do not let town boards dictate the development of the residential towns. This used to be, well, I'm not going to go into that, but the character of this town is at stake here.
You've been speaking for almost 5 minutes.
Okay, I'm so done. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Gentleman over here.
Yes. Can you hear me now?
Okay. Yes.
My name is Charles Zimmer, 101 Austin Road. I am very much in favor of this project and consider myself hopefully a potential resident in the age-restricted area. Hopefully not in the memory care area, but you never know. Maybe I will prove that right now. I only have one concern. I see this as a landlocked development. I see one major thoroughfare coming in. I see a bit of a roadway around the back, because we know Raytheon has two exits. But I'm concerned not so much about the obvious traffic that will be on Route 20. I'm concerned about the traffic within the property with 250 apartments, people going to work in the morning, coming and going. That is a 12-foot roadway in there, a 24-foot, which I think maps into two roads. So I have a question for the planning board or those others who have been involved in negotiation regarding the apartment area. Have you considered other roadways or thoroughfares through there, either to another route to Route 20 or possibly another access road so that there is another way out to improve the flow of traffic? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Zimmer. The question is whether the planning board has considered alternate roadways in the design. Mr. Hebert.
So first of all, there are two ways in and out of the site. There is the main entrance, certainly, which we have talked about quite a bit right here, which will have a signal and will have a pedestrian-activated signal, so you can actually have a crosswalk on Route 20 in this area that people can negotiate. There's a second entrance and exit there. We have secured through the development agreement, I should say through the among the conditions, an easement here, so that should this property owner at some point be interested in connecting with this property, that there would be an opportunity to do so. And in just a quick comment regarding the former speaker, I appreciate her comments. I have been in this town for 9 years. I moved here from Watertown, a very urban area, to bucolic Sudbury, and I was frankly a bit horrified by Route 20 and the congestion and the fact that I couldn't, you know, go to, you know, Twisted and get a frozen yogurt and walk across the street safely with my kids. This project, in fact, is really intended to reverse that and incentivize the kind of pedestrian-friendly, well-streetscape kind of development that we'd love to have in Sudbury. So I just wanted to add that note as well.
Thank you. There's one gentleman here. Can we get him a mic? Third row, please.
Thank you. Mark Winters, 81 Phillips Road in Sudbury, and obviously. And in the spirit of full disclosure, I've been in the commercial real estate industry for 30 years, and our firm has done work with national development. But I come here tonight as a 14-year Sudbury resident, and I've heard a number of people in the room tonight talk about the Whalen Project or talk about Whole Foods. And I just want to thank the boards for all of the hard work, effort, and thoughtful consideration they've put into this project, because I will tell you, nobody in this room should underestimate how lucky we are in terms of getting this right. This is as good as it gets in terms of our project. And the reason why I say that is because not only the design, which is not a strip mall. It's more of a lifestyle center, mixed use, as Peter said, with a lot of walking areas, green space. The second part is having Whole Foods as a tenant. I don't do retail, but a lot of people in my office do. Whole Foods is the gold standard when it comes to a retailer. What we see continually is they encourage other businesses to invest in their business. They encourage high-end residential nearby, and they also affect the other stores in the center, which greatly outperform other centers with comparable tenant mixes. But I think in addition to that, we all have to take into consideration a market timing perspective, because people have talked about the Whalen Project, and keep in mind that the Whalen Project has suffered through two previous downturns in the market in the early 2000s and the late 2000s, and that was stigmatized as a project for a long time. It took a while to get off the ground, and we have this dead right in terms of the design, dead right in terms of the tenants, and dead right in terms of the market timing. And my concern is if we miss this opportunity, it may be a long time before all of the conditions are as good as they are right now.
Thank you, sir. I know I said I would entertain a motion to call the question, but there's a woman in the balcony who has been patiently holding up her card for quite some time. So I'm going to take one more, and then I'll entertain that motion.
Okay. Marie Rock, 26 Whispering Pine Road. And I tend to agree with Ms. Carlson with respect to how the character of the town may change. And one of the reasons is because if you get on Route 20 with your car and you're not headed east toward Boston and go through lovely Wayland and Weston and so forth, you head west, you will see that town after town after town has had similar developments right along Route 20. And for driving purposes and overall aesthetics, it looks like a nightmare. I mean, it really is. My other concern is that I've heard this discussion of, you know, we'll have make the sidewalks available so that people will be able to cross Route 20 and so forth. Well, I think we sort of have something like that now. But if you've ever stood at the intersection of Union Street and Route 20, as I have, holding signs to come vote at the town meeting, you will see that people just are very impatient and the traffic is just very, very congested. And I don't see how it is ever going to be mitigated with, you know, a pedestrian button to let people cross, because I just feel that more people are going to get killed that way. My other concern is that I would like to know the occupancy rate of, I know people brought up Wayland time and time again, but what the heck is the occupancy rate in the different areas of the Wayland Project? And we know that it's been out there for a number of years, but I'd really like to know that and whether or not we're going to wind up with that same fate. Thank you.
Does anyone know what the occupancy rate is of the Whalen Project? We have no information on that question. Okay, I promised I would entertain a motion to call the question. Would somebody like to make such a motion? Can someone stand and say their name and make the motion, please? Ms. Rupenian.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Kirsten Rupenian, 45 Harness Lane. I think we've had an awful lot of discussion around this this evening. I think the project has been vetted thoroughly by the boards and committees. I think they've demonstrated that they are willing to work with National Development. And one moment, I'm going to make the motion.
Excuse me, Ms. Rupenian, please stop talking.
Anyways.
Mr. Abrams, point of order.
Robert Abrams, 48 Horse Pond Road. Mr. Moderator, you've told us that it's your policy and you have enforced up until now that one cannot get up and speak for or against an article and then move the question. Ms. Rapinian is making a speech.
I understand
she can't
your
make
point.
A motion.
Mr. Abrams, please stop talking now. You have correctly stated my policy, and if Ms. Rapinian stops talking and tries to make a motion, then that will be out of order. So, Ms. Rapinian, please continue.
Okay. May I now make the motion?
You may not.
I may not.
And the rule is, just so everybody understands, a point of order is correct by Mr. Abrams, is that you cannot rise, make a speech, and then call the question. You have to rise and call the question.
Okay.
So,
can I finish my speech then, since I'm standing up anyway?
No, I think your time ended when you tried to make an improper motion. So I'm going to go to Mr. Hardenberg now. Can you just hand the mic over to Mr. Hardenberg, please?
Jan Hardenberg, 7 Tippling Rock Road. I'd like to call the question.
Okay. Does that receive a second? It does. Okay. 2/3 vote to call the question. There's a point of order in the balcony. Can we get a mic to this woman, please?
You. Elaine Barnard Goldstein, 40 Indian Ridge Road.
What is your point of order?
The point of order is, will there be time for questions about the second and third questions?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Okay. 2/3 to call the question. All in favor of calling the question and terminating debate, please raise your cards. All those opposed, that passes by well more than 2/3. We're on to a vote. The quantum of vote to pass Article 1 is 2/3. It's a zoning change. You need 2/3 to pass this article. All those in favor of the motion under Article 1, please raise your cards. All those opposed. That passes nearly unanimously and certainly by well more than 2/3. On to Article 2. Ms. Giuliano for a motion.
Move to approve the master development plan submitted by BPR Sudbury Development LLC, care of National Development, as stated in the article.
Does that receive a second? It does. There's no presentation time allotted for this article. However, there's plenty of time for questions, comments, and debate. Who wants to be heard on Article 2? Where? Okay. Can we get a mic over to both of these folks over here? Right next to you. There you go. Okay.
Hi, it's Rebecca Chizzo, Whitetail Lane. I hope there would be some kind of discussion as to turf management and what kind of weed control they're going to expect. You know, when your grass is brown and you know the crabgrass is coming in, there's a high likelihood, if you have 50 acres, that you're going to want to put Roundup on it or glyphosate. And actually, those have health implications. It also
can I interrupt you for just 1 minute? I see that there are many people leaving. I caution you not to do that. There is always a possibility that someone would move for reconsideration, and the vote on the previous article that was thought to be passed could be reconsidered. So I understand that some people have commitments that they need to get to and so are leaving, but it's not always wise, especially when motions for reconsideration are allowed under our bylaw. I would also ask that if you do need to leave, that you do so quietly so that the speakers are not interrupted. Please continue.
Thank you. So basically my question is, will there be additional talk about, you know, what we're putting there? I think we could probably do a lot better as far as the scene if we included native plants, things for pollinators, you know, other than just grass. Grass is easy to maintain. But also, what kind of restrictions or what kind of discussion will go on as far as how those things are going to be maintained? All the golf courses, for example, have given very difficult time because it's a big area and they want to maintain it in a certain way.
Okay.
Thanks.
All right. Someone from the planning board want to speak to the landscape plan? Mr. Garvin.
Thank you, Mr. Fee. It's a great point, and a point that the planning board looked through is a number of hearings on discussing. In our conformance agreement and recommendations, number 14 speaks to landscaping and irrigation. It states that native and drought-tolerant plantings, as reflected in the current landscape plan, will be used to reduce water usage. Developer will have to put in irrigation wells to reduce the use of any potable water or eliminate the use of any potable water. As mentioned, we've talked about using gray water systems throughout. Additionally, they are required to use rain sensors and moisture meters.
Okay, thank you. In my eagerness to get to your questions and comments, I neglected to poll the Board of Selectmen, FinCom, and the Planning Board as to their position on Article 2. Thank God for Town Council, who reminded me of my error. Board of Selectmen, do you have a position on Article 2?
The Board of Selectmen supports this article.
Can you say that again, Mr. Woodard?
The Board of Selectmen supports this article.
FinCom, Ms. Berry?
The Finance Committee.
Just a minute, Ms. Berry. What's your point of order? Okay, we'll get right back to you. Ms. Berry.
The Finance Committee unanimously recommends approval of Article 2. We've reviewed the proposal extensively and feel it's a good agreement. Although the committee takes a conservative view of the net tax revenue, we all agree this is a good agreement for the town.
Thank you. For the record, Planning Board, have a position on Article 2.
The Planning Board supports Article 2 unanimously.
Okay, ma'am, you had a point of order. Can you stand, please?
Do I have to
identify yourself, name and address, please. What's your point of order?
Rebecca Chizzo, Whitehall Lane. He didn't really answer my main question.
That's not an appropriate point. Excuse me. Just when I recognize you, you can speak, okay? That's not an appropriate point of order. If there's an error in procedure or something of that nature, you can bring that to my attention and we can fix it. Can you restate your question again and we'll try to answer it quickly?
Basically, my question involved weed maintenance or grounds maintenance in something that large with that much grass and playing fields. I'm afraid there'll be likely use of chemicals.
Okay. Will there be the use of chemicals on site? Do we have a OEM plan for that? Somebody speak to that from the Planning Board or the Conservation Commission? Can you speak to this question? Great. Thank you.
Hi. Debbie Dineen, Conservation Coordinator. Conservation Commission has two orders of conditions, or basically wetland permits, out on this site already. We anticipate more with different phases of the development as it goes forward. The orders of conditions that were issued and the ones that will be issued will have a standard condition in them that prohibits the use of pesticides and herbicides on the site, on any area within wetland jurisdiction, or any areas that drain directly to a wetland resource area, as probably 90% of the site does. I hope that answers your question.
Does that answer your question? Okay. This gentleman right here in the blue shirt, you're all set? Okay. This gentleman, Mr. Surratt.
Hank Surratt, 58 Longfellow Road. While this might be not receptive given the prior vote, when I moved from Cambridge to Sudbury in January of 1978, I was looking for a bucolic, semi-rural community to live in that would be laid back and attractive with lots of woods and ease of traffic in and out of my office in Boston. Anyone who says to me that traffic lights will ease the flow of traffic ought to remember the old saw, I'm from the IRS, I'm here to help you. Has anybody ever met a traffic light that did not increase congestion? Come on, let's be real about it. This is exactly the kind of development that I abhor. It's a strip mall piled on top of other strip malls that will cause Route 20 to become a further clog of traffic, and increase the commercialization of this town to the point that it will no longer be anything like what I wanted when I came here, but will instead be a replication of Route 9 or all of the commercial arteries that strangle. An earlier speaker talked about it with a great job that Concord and Lexington have done in their development. If we defeat this, if we defeat this soundly, we can have development that can be focused on developing something other than this. The Wayland program was a failure. This program will make some people a lot of money. Some people are going to get very rich on this project. But I think the quality of life in the community will suffer as a result. And therefore, I urge the defeat of this article.
Thank you, Mr. Surratt. I would just remind the hall that we've passed Article 1, and that mixed-use overlay district zoning has passed. Article 2 addresses the master development plan approval, which was discussed by Ms. Giuliano. So while I want all questions to be answered, all concerns to be addressed, because we're dealing with Article 2 now, if you could focus on questions or comments regarding the master plan approval, that's what this article is about. Who else wishes to be heard on Article 2? This gentleman right here.
Hi, I'm Steve Tripoli, 31 Marlboro Road. Since this is a discussion of the master development plan, I wanted to ask a question, and I give great deference to the boards that unanimously support this, but I wanted to ask a question about whether a larger development perspective, a town-wide and a regional development perspective, was taken into account when you approved this project. And I'm especially concerned, as from what I've heard with other people, about whether the impact of numerous projects like this around the area, the one in Wayland, ones in Marlboro, ones in Lexington, Concord, what it's going to mean for traffic. Because I don't see traffic infrastructure or mass transit infrastructure that will meet the needs, and I understand that we're trying to meet a lot of goals here for affordable housing and to redo the Raytheon site in a feasible way, but I worry about the traffic implications, and I wonder if that larger regional implication has been taken into account.
Okay, Mr. Tripoli has asked about the regional planning associated with this project. Mr. Morley? Mr. Hebert? Mr. Morley?
Well, actually not Mr. Morley. We have the town's traffic consultant here in the hall tonight, Jeff Dirk. If you could come up, he would be much wiser than I.
Mr. Dirk, are you a Sudbury resident? Hang on just a second. Let me get your CV here. Give me a minute. Okay. In response to Mr. Tripoli's question, Mr. Morley has suggested that the town's traffic engineer would be the appropriate person to answer it. Mr. Jeffrey Dirk is not a resident of Sudbury. He can speak to the hall only with the consent of the hall. He is a professional engineer, graduate of the University of Massachusetts in 1991. He is an affiliate with the Institute of Transportation Engineers. He has numerous professional registrations and certifications. I've reviewed his CV, and he appears highly qualified to speak on these matters. Is there a motion to allow Mr. Dirk to address the hall? Is there a second? All in favor? All opposed? That passes by well more than a majority. Mr. Dirk.
Thank you. The transportation master plan that was submitted as a part of the project included a holistic view of all development projects, not only that are currently contemplated in the town, but also in adjacent communities.
Stay there. Other questions? Mr. Triple, you want to follow that up?
I just would like to know what the findings were. The findings of the study were that the infrastructure that will be constructed as a part of this development provides adequate capacity not only to serve the build-out of this project as contemplated as a part of the master plan, but also plan future development in the area.
Okay. Stay there just for one more minute, please. Any other questions for Mr. Dirk? Questions for Mr. Dirk? Right here. Please remove your hat. Thank you.
Good evening, Brian Kane, 33 Victoria Road. First off, I'd just like to say I'm really impressed with the amount of effort and work that's gone into the development of this project, this program. There's been a lot of chat about the traffic issues. I've actually attended some of the prior meetings, and I've spoken with Mr. Burke. I think what might be interesting for a lot of folks in the room to hear is some of the details around that plan. That was a concern that I have. We all know that traffic is a nightmare along Route 20 already, and that was a big concern of mine. So through some prior meetings, I got a little bit of more detail out of Mr. Dirk related to that as far as how the lights will be timed all the way up and down Route 20 as far up as the intersection of Landon and 20, et cetera.
Can you address that, sir?
Yes. So there's a couple of things. We've spoken a lot about the pedestrian activity or in sidewalks that will be constructed as a part of the project. But I think one of the other speakers had mentioned about it's counterintuitive to think that traffic signals will improve the flow of traffic. But in fact, what's happening here is two things. The first thing is you drive along Route 20, what really happens in terms of impedance of the flow of traffic is the fact that you have left-turning movements happening. What's happening as a part of this project is a widening of Route 20 to provide left-turn lanes. So as you think about the traffic that's happening at all of these retail establishments along the corridor, what we're now doing is putting the turning traffic, those left turns, in their own lanes, so that allows the traffic that's going straight through on Route 20 to move more efficiently. The second piece of this plan is the coordination of the traffic signals, and what the goal of that is that we are adding a traffic signal to the corridor, but by synchronizing these traffic signals together, what it means is that once the traffic arrives at a signal, what we're basically doing is packaging it all up into a queue or a platoon of vehicles, and the synchronization efficiently moves that package of vehicles from one signal to the next signal to the next signal through successive green lights. So what that means is introducing another traffic signal does cause some delay, but your overall travel time improves through both the addition of those turn lanes and then efficiently moving these slugs of cars through the traffic signals, one signal to the next signal. So your overall travel time is improved as a result of this project and its improvements.
Thank you, Mr. Dirk. Okay, questions regarding the development plan. You can sit, please. Thank you. No. Questions from the audience regarding the subject matter of Article 2, which is the Master Development Plan. This gentleman right here.
Hi, Glenn Merrill Skoloff, Allen Place. This is actually a traffic-related question. We're pedestrian overpasses ever considered in the master plan?
Say it again.
Pedestrian overpasses to cross, were they ever considered as part of the master plan?
Do we have a quick answer to that question? Mr. Morley.
I will say no and also tell everyone that the agreement requires review of the traffic after 60% of the property is built to see if it's performing as we expect it to.
Okay. This gentleman in the red shirt.
Greg George, 39 Meadow Drive.
Can you say that again, please?
Greg George, 39 Meadow Drive. One, I'd like to also thank everyone. This is a great presentation. A lot of volunteer work, I'm sure, done into this. I apologize if this is not a master development plan question, if the subtlety sort of is lost.
Join the club.
But I do have a question. We have this Bruce Freeman rail trail that seems like it's coming and happening. Has there been any discussion of whether there's going to be a sidewalk that lets people coming down on that across into this development? Thank you.
Planning Board, any interconnectivity with the proposed rail trail? Mr. Morley.
So the Bruce Freeman rail trail comes down next to Union Avenue and crosses at Middlesex Bank and Knobscott Road, and there will be improved sidewalk access from that location to this site. This site also abuts the east-west rail, which may someday be a rail trail as well, and the developer is prepared for access from that rail trail to their development.
Let me ask it this way. Does anyone have any questions about the master development plan? Anyone have any questions about the master development plan? If I call on you, it better be about the master development plan, Mr. DePompei. Mr. DePompei.
Hi,
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. I will do my best. I had asked a question before about water discharge. The master development plan, as it currently exists, to my understanding, exceeds the discharge that's allowable within a Zone 2 water resource overlay district. How is that addressed, assuming the master plan is passed?
Ms. Giuliano or Ms. Eggleston want to address that question? Who? Ms. Giuliano. Oh, Ms. Kablak.
Good evening, Jody Kablak, Director of Planning and Community Development. Dan, you did ask this question before, and we kind of moved past it pretty quickly, but that question actually is not in the Master Development Plan. That really was a question for the zoning bylaw, I will note. Section 4792B of the bylaw on page 11 of your warrants does give some consideration to vary some of the requirements of the Water Resource Protection District overlay. And one of those is for the continued operation of a project that is approved by town meeting. As I had discussed with town meeting at the annual town meeting in May, we did propose an article that would have allowed wastewater treatment plants in Zone 2 to be expanded, and that was voted down. I did note at that presentation that the Raytheon project, it did have an implication for the Raytheon project. However, the zoning that was just passed allows that to be varied. So while there will be expanded use of that wastewater treatment plant in the Raytheon project, I believe that the zoning has been passed and will allow that.
Okay. Mr. Drowis, back. Wait a minute. Wait a minute, please. Get him a mic, please.
Neil Drowis, Colonial Road. I'd like to make a motion to call the question.
Excellent. Does that receive a second? It does. Okay. In order to call the question, we need a two-thirds vote. Okay. Hold on just a second. The motion has been made and seconded, so I'm going to proceed with the motion. And in order to call the question, we need a two-thirds majority. I will note for the hall that there is a woman who I did not see previously, but who professes to want to be heard. Before we proceed to the vote, let's proceed to the vote. All those in favor of calling the question, please raise your cards. All those opposed, that passes by well more than two-thirds. I'm sorry. Okay, so we're on to the vote. This requires a two-thirds vote in the affirmative to pass. All those in favor of the main motion under Article 2, please raise your cards. All those opposed. That passes nearly unanimously and certainly by well more than two-thirds required. Article 2 passes on to Article 3. Ms. Giuliano.
Move in the words of the article.
Does that receive a second? It does. Again, there is no presentation. We've heard the presentation on Article 3. It regards the acquisition of land, grants of easements regarding the Boston Post Road Fire Station Number 2. Given the hour, it's almost quarter of ten. It's past quarter of 10. It would be helpful if folks could address their questions to the substance of the article. Who wishes to be heard on Article 3? Mr. Coe, point of order.
Did you mean to ask the selectmen and the FinCom for their...
I did. Thank you. I'm just so excited to hear from you, Mr. Coe, so thank you for reminding me. Finance Committee... I'm sorry, Board of Selectmen have a position on Article 3?
The Board of Selectmen supports this article.
FinCom?
The Finance Committee... The Finance Committee.
No. Please don't move the mics around. He'll kill me.
Don't do it.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
The Finance Committee unanimously supports this article.
Okay. Finance Committee unanimously supports. Who wishes to be heard on Article 3? Right here. Mr. Gish. Can you get Mr. Gish a microphone, please? You got one of you guys has to. Okay. Thank you. Come on down.
Jim Gish, 35 Rolling Lane. Could we please see the map showing the expanded land? I don't recall that from the presentation.
Mr. Thompson? Does someone from the proponent team want to remind folks what this article is about, please? How about Ms. Cablock?
First, I wanted to just show you what we're talking about is approximately 8,000 square feet of area right here that the developer has offered to donate to the town for an expansion, potential future expansion of the fire station if needed. And then there's also cross easements that would allow the town fire trucks to enter in, come across, and come so that they can pull through a new station. That's the plans that the fire chief has been discussing for several months since this development came in. So there's also possibly some landscape easements along this edge of the property so that the landscape is more uniform across the front edge of the property.
May I follow up?
You may.
How sure are we that that would meet future needs? I mean, it seems like a rather arbitrary, I mean, it fits nicely. I mean, it's what's there, but how do we know that would fit future needs for a expanded fire department?
Well, the fire chief is here, but I can say that he has done some feasibility analysis of a fire station that would meet the department's needs and fit on that property, including that 8,000 square feet.
Thank you.
Any other questions on Article 3? Mr. Drowis. Can we get Mr. Drowis a mic, please?
Drawas.
Neil Drowis, Colonial Road. I'd like to make a motion to...
You're doing fine. Go ahead.
I'd like to make a motion to call the question.
Excellent. Does that receive a second? Okay. In order to call the question, there's a two-thirds vote. First of all, let me just, before we do this, is there anyone that has a burning desire to say anything on Article 3? Okay. So in order for there's been a motion to call the question. It's been seconded. In order to pass, it requires a two-thirds majority. All in favor of calling the question, raise your cards. All opposed. That passes unanimously. Okay, the question's been called. On to the vote. The quantum of vote required for passage of Article 3 is a majority. All those in favor of the main motion under Article 3, raise your card. All those opposed. That passes nearly unanimously and certainly by well more than a majority. On to Article 4. Town Clerk Rosemary Harvell. Before you start, I repeat my prior warning about leaving early due to the availability of the reconsideration option under our bylaws. If you do need to leave, please do so quietly so we can continue with business. Ms. Harvell.
Thank you. I move to amend Article 1, Section 3 of the General Bylaws as amended by the 2016 Annual Town Meeting as stated in the article.
Does that receive a second? It does. Ms. Harvell.
Okay. So this will be short and sweet. At the last town meeting, there was an amendment to the town bylaws to provide for a special town meeting every October. And in that, we had the provision that it could be moved as many as 7 days later. And what this does is ask you to allow for it to be also as many as 7 days earlier, just to give a little bit more leeway for planning. And as I said in here, we are heading into a tremendous presidential election, and they've instituted a lot of new things, including early voting, which would begin on the 11th business day before the general election. And we still don't have all of the regulations established and provided to us, so we don't know exactly what to expect. This gives us a little more control. So I urge you to approve this article. Thank you.
Thank you. Board of Selectmen?
The Board of Selectmen supports this article.
FinCom?
The FinCom takes no position on this article.
Discussion. Who wishes to be heard under the motion under Article 4? I see no one. Are we sure? Okay. No one? Oh, I knew there was someone. Let's see if there's any, if no one wants to talk, then I'll definitely call the question. But if there's anybody that would like to be heard, I want them to talk. Okay, I see no one. We're going to proceed to a vote on this Article 4. The quantum of vote required for passage is a majority. All in favor, please raise your card. All opposed? That passes unanimously. Before we take up the last articles, I'd like to take some time to recognize and thank a few people. First, Town Manager Melissa Murphy-Rodriguez and her staff, Patty Golden, Leela Frank, Elaine Jones, Mark Thompson, and many others. They all work very hard to organize and prepare every detail of this meeting. Thanks also to the Town Clerk and Town Council, who always provide me with clear and competent advice, and for that I am grateful. I'd also like to take a moment now to recognize our Town Planner, Jody Kablack, who is retiring on June 30th after 25 years of stellar service to the town. You sit down for a sec. Jody hates this stuff. But I have to say a few words because I had the good fortune to work closely with Jody during my 10 years on the planning board, and I can say honestly and from my heart that I have never met a more competent, hardworking, dedicated, or conscientious public servant than Jody. Her accomplishments are many and too numerous to catalog, but she was the driving force between our master plan, the recodification of our zoning law, the creation of our land use priorities plan, the adoption of community preservation, the creation of the housing trust, the enactment of numerous environmental bylaws regulating stormwater and protecting groundwater, as well as major land protection efforts at Cutting Farm, the Boy Scout land at Knobscot, Rice Road, Fairbanks Farm, and many, many more. We as our community owe much to Jody's tireless dedication, and she has been a force in our town that will be sorely missed. So, please join me in a round of applause for Jody Kablack. Now I'd like to recognize our state representative, Carmen Gentile. Gentile, sorry. My bad.
It was my pleasure to work on the planning board for 9 years with Jody. And she's a remarkable person. A couple of weeks ago, I was able to present you with a citation from the House. Our senators aren't here tonight, but I'm here in their stead. And I have a citation for you from the Senate. Be it known that the Massachusetts Senate hereby extends its congratulations to Jody Kablack in recognition of your outstanding vision and leadership serving the town of Sudbury for 25 years. Be it further known that the Massachusetts Senate extends best wishes for continued success, that this citation be duly signed by the President of the Senate and attested to, and a copy hereof transmitted by the Clerk of the Senate. It's signed by President of the Senate Stan Rosenberg and offered by Senator Jamie Eldridge and Senator Mike Barrett. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Carmen. Article 5, Fairbanks Community Center Complex Designer Services. Is there a motion to be made? Mr. Kelly.
Move to indefinitely postpone.
Does that receive a second? It does. Briefly, Mr. Kelly.
Thank you. I'm Jim Kelly. I just want to make sure everybody knows that the Fairbank project is being postponed for asking for additional funds. The Finance Committee did approve a transfer last week. The committee is working very hard. We have a lot of work to do. I think the Fairbank School was built the same year Raytheon moved to Sudbury, so that's kind of fitting for tonight. But we look forward to really working hard with the committee and the residents and, you know, make the community center a building that we all love. We've loved it for many years, and the committee, I know, is anxious to get back to work. Maybe we'll see you in the fall.
Thanks. Finance Committee, position on this article?
The Finance Committee recommends approval of indefinite postponement of this article.
Board of Selectmen?
The Board of Selectmen supports indefinite postponement.
Okay, any discussion on indefinite postponement of Article 5? I see no one wishing to be heard. This requires a majority vote to pass. All those in favor, please raise your card. All those opposed. I need to take just a minute with Town Council for a second. Just wanted to make sure that everything is hunky-dory. Article 6, FY16 budget adjustments. Is there a motion to be made on Article 6?
Move to indefinitely postpone.
Mr. Woodard has made a motion to indefinitely postpone Article 6. Does that receive a second? It does. Okay. You want to say a few words about that, Mr. Woodard?
There are no budget adjustments.
Excellent. All right. It did. Okay, just to make sure that everybody's on the same page here, the town clerk asked if I actually took a vote on Article 5. That was a motion to indefinitely postpone the Fairbanks Community Center. Just for good order, all those in favor of indefinitely postponing Article 5, please raise your card. All those opposed, that passes nearly unanimously, but by well more than the majority required. Okay, and we did have a vote on Article 6? Not yet. Okay. Article 6, the motion to indefinitely postpone requires a majority vote. All those in favor, please raise your card. All those opposed, there's a point of order.
I think the Finance Committee and the Board of Selectmen need to weigh in.
Did I already ask you that on Article 6? I didn't. My bad. I'm sorry. Thanks for all the help tonight, guys. All right. Finance Committee have a report on Article 6.
The Finance Committee recommends approval of indefinite postponement.
Board of Selectmen, position on Article 6?
The Board of Selectmen support this article. The postponement, indefinite postponement of this article. Excuse me.
Okay, anybody wish to be heard on the indefinite postponement of Article 6? I see no one. All those in favor, please raise your card. All those opposed? That passes unanimously, or nearly unanimously, but certainly by well more than the majority required. I'll take a motion to dissolve this special town meeting. Is there a second? All those in favor of dissolving this special town meeting? All those opposed? That passes unanimously. Thanks a lot.